Good afternoon. I call Human Services Finance Committee to order. Members, we have a quorum present. With that, I just wanted to begin with the approval of minutes for April 4, 2024. Chair Fischer.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I'd like to move approval of the Human Services Finance Committee meeting minutes from April 4, 2024.
Chair Fischer moves the approval of minutes for April 4, 2024. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The minutes for April 4, 2024 are now approved. We also have minutes for April 16, 2024. First Chair Brown.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the minutes from April 16, 2024.
Vice Chair Brown moves the approval of minutes for April 16, 2024. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes for April 16, 2024 are now approved. Members, now we are up to our final bill.
Oh, praise
and, with that, I just wanted to make sure that we're in transition here. I will move that House File 5280 to be re-referred to Ways and Means. That's the motion before us, and I will be going to the testifier table.
As we get ready to begin here, I do want to urge folks coming in to take their paperwork and make sure they get situated quietly as we get started. Chair Noor, welcome to the committee. We have House File 5280 before us. Representative Noor, would you like to go ahead and move House File 5280 to be re-referred to Ways and Means?
That's my motion, Madam Chair. I do have a DE1. I just wanted to move a DE1, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Chair Noor would like to move the DE1 author's amendment before the committee. We need to go ahead and approve the DE1 to get that.
Madam Chair, I have A11 cool. To DE1.
Yes. All right. And then I will move the A11 amendment before the committee. Chair Noor, would you like to speak briefly to the A11?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask the nonpartisan staff to walk us through the A11 amendment.
Ms. Minnelli.
Madam Chair, members, the A11 amendment is an author's amendment for House File 5280. The first few changes on page 1, lines 3 through 6 are all technical changes that were suggested by the reviser's office. The addition on starting on page 1, line 7, and going through page 3, line 7, are two sections related to assisted living, related to staff orientations and reassessments. The changes on page 3, lines 8 through 16 are all related to the expansion of the nursing facility loan program and the creation of the new account for that program. The addition, starting on page 3, line 17, is some language related to the implementation of PACE. I believe this is no cost language. Then the changes starting at the very bottom of page 3 on line 30 and going through page 4, line 14 are all modifications to the peer supports and recovery community organization language. The changes on page 4, lines 16 through 18 are related to the reentry waiver language. The addition starting on page 4, line 19 is some additional language related to locked ERTS facilities. And then on page 5, line starting on line 13, that section, we removed it and are reinserting it. This is a section related to civil commitment, and this section was already amended in Laws 2024, Chapter 79, the DCT recodification bill, so that's why we had to pull it and reinsert it. And then there were also some changes to that language in paragraph F, which starts on page 7, line 9. On page 8, starting on line 21 and going through line 27, two additional members are being added to the Mentally Ill and Dangerous Civil Commitment Task Force. Page 8, lines 29 through the end of that page are some technical cleanup in the article related to creating the DCT agency. The top of page 9, lines 1 through 7, are some changes to the DCT agency rulemaking authority language. And then the changes on page 9, lines 8 through 12, are related to the establishment of an Office of Homelessness and Housing Supports, and it's adding another program to be under the purview of that office. And then all of the changes beginning on page 9, line 13, through the end of the author's amendment are all related to the appropriations article, either modifying riders, adding riders, or changing numbers due to some changes to where things are put within different budget activities.
Madam Chair, I think Mr. Berg wanted to go over a little bit of some of the sections in this spreadsheet.
Yes. Mr. Berg, if you'd like to continue.
Madam Chair, yes, I can. The items that Ms. Pennelly mentioned at the end of the author's amendment, the A11 amendment, it will be fastest for me to just refer to the spreadsheet that was passed out earlier in the week. They are all technical changes. They do not add or subtract any items, nor do they change the cost of any item that was on the spreadsheet before. They are mostly incorrect budget activities and incorrect riders. I just will refer briefly to on the spreadsheet that was passed out on page 3, line 177. It previously had $154,000 in fiscal year 26 for the adult mental health grant, startup grants. That has been changed to 77 in each year, same amount, just a change in the years and change in the rider. On page 4, line 199, this is part of the budget neutral technical changes. The original governor's bill had $1,347,000 being moved from one year to another. That number has been adjusted to $1,281,000, so a slight adjustment to numbers. On page 5 of the spreadsheet on line 234, there was an incorrect budget activity. I believe it said 55, which was disability grants, but it is now 15, which is the administrative portion of behavioral health. On line 240, the same thing. That is now budget activity 14 and was previously listed as a different budget activity. And on line 247, again, that is now budget activity 15 and previously had a wrong number in there. Those are all the changes, and they, as I say, they, because the spreadsheet rolls things up by budget activity, when you change the budget activity, or in this case, correct the budget activity, it moves money around in the bill, but it does not change the amount of money in the bill or for each individual item.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Berg. All right. And with that, we will then go to any discussion on the A11. Lee New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Knorr. My question, a quick review, is on the changes, the 8.29 and 8.30, the change of chief medical officer to executive medical director, is there any appreciable difference between those? Are there requirements of a chief medical officer to be a physician, or is there any difference in qualifications required for those two different titles?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I have Ms. Briones to discuss that difference in the bill.
Ms. Briones, if you'd like to go ahead and state your name and affiliation, and go ahead and proceed.
Sure, for the record, my name is Carrie Briones. I'm the Legislative Director for Direct Care and Treatment. Chair and members, to your question, the change in the amendment was purely for consistency and the title of that individual and direct care and treatment as it's used throughout statute.
Lee New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any additional questions? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Knorr, page 4.14, it's the 10%, 15 down to 10% was sort of the claims. Can you... it's going in the right direction. I think that we're trying to keep a closer eye on some of the peer recovery specialists' claims. Do you know, or does staff know, how many claims there are now that will make the 10% a number? Because 10% doesn't give us a number. What does this look like, and do we know how many claims are currently being run through?
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, I think the 10% came about when the stakeholders met, and I think the conversation it was to reduce from 15% to 10%. I don't know the number of claims. I don't know if the department has got any number, but we can certainly, you know, we can send it to you once I know how many claims out there.
Madam Chair.
Right, Representative Baker.
Just my only question is, again, I want to have some clarity and some accountability to this. I just, what I have asked a couple of different people and I haven't got a number yet is, roughly how many claims do we do now through that system, and what does 10% of that look like? And I don't know if anybody from the department knows that. I just know that this is an important item, because once this is in law, 10% could mean a reasonable number of claims to audit, or it could be a very burdensome thing to go through. I want to make sure, as I talked about the other day, let's not give the folks more than we're looking for, but I want to make sure that we have something reasonable. So if we know what that is, I need to hopefully know what that is as soon as possible, because I want to address that.
Do we have anyone from the department here that might be able to speak to that? Thoughts? I'm not seeing any movement. Oh, wait. Okay. All right. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to go ahead and state your name, and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, Christy Grom with DHS. I unfortunately do not have that claim data, but I can definitely get back to you, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Ms. Graham. I appreciate that. And we can follow up afterwards and make sure that you get the access to that data.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
Thanks.
All right. And with no follow-up, any other questions, concerns, comments on the A11? Seeing no further discussion, we'll go ahead and vote. All those in favor of the A11, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? All right. The ayes have it. I will renew my motion that the A11 is adopted. The motion prevails and the A11 amendment is adopted to the DE. We'll move on to the next here. We do have an A3 amendment to the DE1. Is that who's offering that amendment? Is that you, Representative Baker?
Yes.
All right. Then I will pass it to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment is something that we've talked about before. To members, it seems to kind of slip in every time we have a discussion about ORAC or how we have come to having such a thing called ORAC was through a lot of bipartisan magical work back in 2019. What I'm asking the members to do today is to recognize that work, to respect the work that was done in a bipartisan fashion, and to not support the sunset elimination at this point. It is 7 years before it's supposed to end anyway. And I think if there's an issue, we can talk about it in 6 or 7 years when we know more information about what this is. Madam Chair, I just want to make sure before I forget, I do want to take a roll call on this, because I do want to understand this is where we have to stand up to our word of what getting a bill passed in the first place meant to those members that were there, because I know not everybody here was, you know, voted on House File 400 that Representative Liz Olson and I worked together on. So I'm just asking to please set this one aside. Let's not have the sunset discussion yet. The pharmaceutical companies are paying a much higher fee today for the next 7 years, and let's have this discussion another time if that's what's needed. But I think this is not the right time to do it, and I'm doing this out of the honor of our bodies that worked really hard on this bipartisan bill. So I do hope the chair will accept this, but I do think it's important to put our money where our mouth is. So with that, Madam Chair, I do ask for that and any feedback. Thank you.
All right. A roll call has been requested. Mr. Chair, would you like to comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Baker. The work that you did with Chair Olson, I was sitting in this room in the Human Services at that point. You both presented it. You worked collaboratively. There was no underlying agreement whether that section should stay. And I've talked to Chair Olson about this issue. I know we brought it last year to give people some time. Having that date of 2030 be removed is really essential. We are seeing the deaths from opioid keep on climbing. We haven't seen it go down in many instances. So I think this is the moment that we send the right message, saying that until we're able to handle what we're dealing with, it's really important for us to make sure that we're sending the right message that this, we are not going to continue with the sunset. We want to remove the sunset until we're able to handle the issues of opioid epidemic. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. And then further discussion to the bill, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. Frankly, the main reason for a sunset is that we just don't forget about looking and trying to improve a situation. That forces us to actually sit down and see what's working, what's not, and make it better. Too often, and I'm looking through the years I've been on in the legislature, too often we do something and it just runs on autopilot and we don't go back and fix it. And then we discover years down the line we should have done this or should have done that. And basically, having a sunset doesn't mean it's going to go away. No, it means that we have the responsibility then to go and look at it and review it and fix it and prove it by that date. If there isn't a date, a deadline for us to go back and look at it. Too often, we have been distracted by other things and not done that. So by keeping the sunset doesn't mean it's going to go away. It just means that we're actually going to maintain and keep attention to and make sure that it's either fixed or we go ahead and improve our approach. Because attention is what's required on this issue. And I think this, the amendment will help us maintain attention as it should be. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any further discussion to the A3 amendment? Lee New Brenly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just say, you know, this is, I know I've talked to Dave about this a lot, Representative Baker, sorry. But this is a really frustrating sticking point. And it's because in these halls, the only thing we have is our word. That is our currency here. And the only thing behind that is our own personal integrity. And we're either going to stick to it or we're not. And to suggest that this was done without a firm agreement on that sunset is simply not true. That was an absolutely imperative piece of this legislation. And to suggest otherwise is just not okay. Our word is the only thing we've got here. And I think, as Representative Baker said, I think that he will be one of the only members left after this session who did this. And I believe that everyone in this room has worked with Representative Baker and trusts his word. So this is extraordinarily frustrating that we would question that process, that we would question our word.
Thank you, Lee New Brenly. And then we'll go to Representative Baker for some final comments and the chair.
Thank you. Again, thank you, Chair Knorr, for understanding that the need is still there. But here's what's different today than when it was when we actually passed House File 400. We went after the pharmaceutical companies that were selling drugs in Minnesota. We raised them up substantially to find $14, $15 million to use in our communities, and that is working quite well, I must add. And that is at when the sunset happens, it doesn't go back to the old rates. It goes back to still a higher fee, but not what I would consider rates that were extremely high. And it's also rates that we didn't know what any of the settlements were going to be at that time. So currently, Minnesota is now receiving over $540 million in settlement dollars coming into Minnesota. Representative Olson and I didn't know any of that information when this was agreed to. So that's on top of this. I'm just saying we need to be a state that's being reasonable to all of our companies, pharmaceutical, healthcare, everybody who helps us stay healthy. That was a deal we made, but today it's different. We are being hijacked by drug dealers, by counterfeit pills that's now killing people. It's not overprescribing like it was. This is different. So if you don't support my amendment, it also means that you're taking another permanent tax increase. That's what this is, because our deal was this was going to be temporary. We're going to throttle it back when it makes sense. And you know what? In 8 years, we may not do that, but that's a decision at that point. It's a different problem today. It's not because of health care. They're paying another way as well. I just think we're being true, and so I really do hope that you support my amendment to say, let's just leave it alone right now. Let's come back and visit this in 5, 6, 7 years, but let's stay to our word. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. I know that we agree that you are an honest broker here and really appreciate your perspectives and your contributions. With that, I'm going to go back to the chair for one final word before we go ahead to the roll call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Baker, I think there were some limits that were put under the ORAC, that response under Section 256.043. That was specifically for the opioid response fund. And we also said if it goes beyond 250 with the settlement and everything else, I recall that conversation in this room. And what we said is if we are able to have that amount in the account, the fees are not going to be charged to the manufacturers and all those who we are charging the fee to. And hence, today, I think we know the impact of the opioid crisis that we're facing. I know it was a lengthy conversation, so many meetings that we had to do for House File 400 until we came to the conclusion. But I think for this portion of the bill that we're discussing today, removing that sunset, it was not something that I recall, even within our caucus, saying that we support that place, including the chair who was negotiating, Chair Olson. She was not opposed to the sunset. In fact, she supports our provision that we have here today. So with that, I just wanted to ask you to vote no on the amendment, A3 amendment. Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to go ahead and proceed to the roll call as requested. The chair votes no, and we'll pass it to staff.
Chair Noor?
No.
Chair Noor, nay. Vice Chair Bonner?
No.
Vice Chair Bonner, nay. Lee New Brindley?
Yes.
Lee New Brindley, yay. Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Baker, aye. Representative Clardy?
Nay.
Representative Clardy, nay. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, no.
Representative Fisher, no. Representative Franson?
Yes.
Representative Franson, yes. Representative Gilman?
Yes.
Representative Gilman, yes. Representative Hicks?
No.
Representative Hicks, no. Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Keeler, no. Representative Catiz Watoon?
No.
Representative Catiz Watoon, no. Representative Pryor?
Nay.
Representative Pryor, no. Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Quam, yes. Representative Vernig?
No.
Representative Vernig, no. Representative Zelensnikar?
Aye.
Representative Zelensnikar, aye.
Okay. There being six ayes and nine nays, the motion does not prevail, and the A3 amendment is not adopted. And with that, we're going to move to the A4, and I believe, Representative Baker, that is yours as well.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, again, this is an ORAC indication to allow us to continue the work that we're doing with our current lineup. The ORAC committee council has never been really approached and formally asked to add another seat to the council by the governor's office or anyone else that we have found has had any time in front of the council. This was again tried last year. It ended up not happening, but we did add a seat last year after negotiations. And we made sure that the council was a part of that decision, which we added an urban Native American member to that council as a voting member. So that took a lot of process. But adding members and changing council members on this important, very unique council, I think should have more time involved, should have more process to go actually to the ORAC council to say what they think. Currently, the director who you're looking to add a seat for is currently attending and is always welcome. We have a great relationship. At this time, members, I just ask that we don't support the change to the ORAC Council without asking ORAC. And as a member of that committee, that council, I'm asking right now, we don't support that. So I would appreciate supporting my amendment to not allow that to happen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Baker. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. President Beck, I think you've seen the work of Jeremy Dreher when he comes. He's the lead pastor now for the Office of Addiction and Recovery. In fact, we funded to include youth program and everything under that office last year. And so if you value his input as a non-voting member, it will be appropriate to include him as such because he attends all the meetings for our. He participates in those meetings. This is just to codify into the law that he's allowed to continue the work that he's already doing. Since you have been the chair for ORAC, we ask for your guidance in this process. If you really prefer him to just to stay out of it, it's the conversation we're having with this amendment that you put forward before us.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any further discussion to the A4? Seeing none, we'll go back to Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this isn't about Mr. Drucker, but that could change. And the seat's there. The seat's there ongoing. And again, there's a process to follow, and I hope that our current, you know, connections with it and with the office is fine. But we look ahead on these things. We look ahead down the road. You don't make decisions on the people that are sitting there. It's the positions and what they hold. And so I just want to make sure that the members know that it's not about that individual today, because he is welcome and he does a good job. But it's because we've established a good relationship. I don't know that that's always going to be there with whoever's going to be the next. So, again, I just recommend that this should go through the council and would appreciate your support of my amendment.
All right. Final word, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, members, if that is the point, I think we can go through the council because I know the council has done an amazing job with all the members representing from the Senate and the House and the membership. So I will ask members to vote yes on this amendment.
Thank you.
All right. That being said, we will go ahead and go to the motion. All those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? All right. The A4 prevails, and the A4 is adopted. Okay. And with that, we'll move on to the A5 amendment. Representative Baker again.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I'll make these quicker if I can, but I really appreciated this last one, and maybe I'll get a swing at this one too. This is just extending our Project Echo. I've talked to the chair about this before. It's giving more time to lay out the program that's there. It really doesn't spend any more money, members. It just allows a little bit more time on the Project Echo and the good work that they're doing. So I hope that you would accept this as a positive amendment, and would all support your appreciate your support in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, I think we appreciate the work that Project ECHO is doing. This was my bill, so I'll appreciate a yes vote on this amendment.
All right. Any further discussion before we go to the vote? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. The motion does prevail, and the A5 amendment is adopted. All right. It looks like we have an A6. Representative Quam, are you offering that one?
Yes, Madam Chair. I offer Amendment A6. And basically, instead of the multiple years of special rulemaking, it says there are 6 months, and then there we have a session. Because of all the input, discussion, and energy in our committee in this area, I think it's important that we give them that 6 months, and then we, during session, work on assisting in the tweaking and the improvement, because basically, I think multiple years is not a great thing to not use regular rule process, but it also would help us to be engaged in that process, you know, January through May to improve it, because I think we need to continue to be engaged, and this would help support that activity. So I ask for a yes vote.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, members, I think this is identical to line 9.3 in the A11 amendment, which reflects the same outcome that you are requesting in this bill and in this amendment. So we're going up to 2027 because of the advisory council expiration is until that time of June, I believe, June 30th, 2027. So this is identical to the A11 with the exception of the difference of a year. So I'll ask you to vote no because we've already adopted a change to reduce the timeline for the rulemaking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it appears we may have some great minds on this, already taking this into consideration. With that, let's go ahead and move to Representative Quam for a final word.
Yes, the difference is 6 months and then having the timing of where the legislature gets involved. The A11 allows for an additional, what, year and a half of special rulemaking. And so I still think that it's better to have this timetable than, you know, again, several years of special rulemaking, because it forces us to be more engaged in this very important area. Thank you, Mr. Right. Chair, Madam Chair. And
any further discussion before we go to Chair Noor for the final word? Seeing none, Chair Noor.
Madam Chair, members, as I noted, the advisory council that we created, which also includes legislators, will also be sunsetting at that point, so which means it corresponds with the advisory council that we created. So I think it's more appropriate to give them that time frame and to continue the work that they're supposed to do. And I think this small difference of a few months will not make a huge difference while we have the advisory council in effect. So I ask you to vote no on A6.
All right. With that, we're going to go ahead and proceed to a vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Nay.
No.
And the no or the nays have it. The motion does not prevail, and the A6 is not adopted. We'll move on to the A7, and it appears we are back to Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is identifying something I brought up the other day in committee about grabbing some money from the ORAC fund from legislators to go to a project that I think has some merit. This isn't about my saying the project isn't good. Are we on the 500? Am I on the right one? Yep, okay. And so my concern is that, so you know how ORAC works, we do an annual granting an RFP once a year. We typically announce it and release it in June, and we give it about 45 days for folks to look at it, apply for it. We put buckets up. Here are our areas of concerns. If it's education, prevention, is it harm reduction, is it workforce support? But we set this up usually January, February, and March. In fact, tomorrow we have our next ORAC meeting up in Buffalo at one of the hospitals there in Buffalo, and it's a statewide group that gets together. And we're getting ready to now finalize this painful project of getting an RFP ready to release. It is a challenging process to do this because of all the things we have to do. If the legislators start grabbing money like this right now, that kind of shakes our whole thing, because we had a number in our mind of about $15-16 million that we were getting ready to provide for statewide coverage. My ask today, Mr. Chair, is just let's take it out, not do anything with this today through the appropriations, because we don't have any money this year. We're tight on dollars. I would wholeheartedly want them to come to ORAC here in about 2 months, because I've seen this project here. I think it's a very valid, strong project that would likely get a very good score. I don't know that. It's a process. But I'm just asking members to appreciate the work that ORAC and its members and DHS does to get all this stuff in place. But if we start doing this way, it is going to really lessen the effectiveness of what we can do and what we can plan to do. So, members, again, I'm not saying to not fund this eventually, but we have other avenues. And ORAC is a good opportunity for them. Again, County, Hennepin County and HCMC have received over $3.3 million from ORAC over the last 3 years. They do a great job. So I'm just asking in this case, please don't jump into this fund that has a good system to set up. And if we want to do this, then it should come out of our own dollars. And I just don't know that we have that, but I just ask members to support my amendment to pause it on this project, and we find other ways to get them done. Thanks.
Right. Thank you, Representative Baker. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in this response, I listen to you when you say that we should not be using the general funds for this purpose. And when I look through the process of where can we find the funds to pay for this, I think it belongs right there in the ARC funds that we have, the opioid response funds. But given that I think you are now opposed to even the opioid response funds, I'm willing to work with you, but I want to keep the language so that we can keep on having that conversation as we go forward with this bill. So I ask members to vote no on the amendment on A7, but we'll continue to have the conversation.
All right, thank you. Is there any additional discussion to the A7 amendment? Seeing Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker, for the amendment. I would just caution members. This, I think we all agreed, there is certainly merit to this program. But there should be significant concern for all of us about one group, one program, skipping the line, not going through the process, not going through the process of being scrutinized among all the other programs that are potentially out there, all of which would provide a benefit. But we are now singling out a group and a program to bypass that process. And the result of this is turning this ORAC fund into a slush fund for the legislature. If we as the legislature can just dip in and pull these funds back for whatever pet projects we have, that diminishes the integrity of the ORAC Council. And we should be very, very cautious moving forward about how we do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I noted, we will keep having the conversation with Representative Baker, who used to be the chair for ORAC, and figure out how we move forward.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with no further discussion, we're going to go ahead and vote on the amendment. All those in favor of the A7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Nay. And the nays have it. The A7 does not prevail. And the amendment is not adopted. And with that, we appreciate your willingness to continue that conversation, Chair Noor. All right, moving along to the A8 amendment. Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, I think this is my final amendment, so thank you for that. And again, I've talked about this before, and this is the 3% SUD rate that we missed last year. In conference committee, it went to conference after all the work that we did last year at a time when we had record spending, record money to actually spend. At the last minute, the SUD rate increases were taken out. I really don't have an exact number of what this is and what it's going to cost. I have been asking for a fiscal note almost the entire session period that we've been here, and it hasn't gotten to me yet. I don't know if nonpartisan has a number there, but I'm just bringing it to the members here to take it to conference with the team, with the conference committee members, and whatever this number is, this bill isn't perfectly lined up to the targets anyway, so I'm not throwing anything necessarily way out of balance that already is balanced. But I'm asking, number one, Madam Chair, for a roll call on this one, because I want to know the seriousness of our members about making sure that we give this 3% reimbursement fairness and equity to give it to these employees that are leaving our industry. We've seen 45 centers close in the last 12 to 18 months in the state. That's a net closure now. So openings and closings, but that's a net. We're losing ground. So I just really want to urge members to please help us take it to conference and work through the details there of what is the cost, where can we find the money? Because right now I know that Chair Noor is working to try to find a solution here. I know he cares about this, as we all do. But I'm asking members to please support taking this on to the next step so that we can tell our workers out there in Carleton, in St. Peter, and all those areas that this does get affected that we do care about you, and we'll try to keep working on this. We'll figure this out at the very end of the day. So with that, members, I really urge a yes vote.
All right. We'll send it over to Mr. Chair, if you'd like to go ahead and comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is something of importance. We've talked about it Chair Fish has made this as a priority. And the key question here is, as we keep on working through the process, I think there will be something in the end, but at this point, we don't even have the fiscal note. And for us just to adopt an amendment and say we will be able to achieve the goals of that amendment, it's not appropriate way of doing business in terms of setting the budget. So, Representative Becker, I just wanted to ask you, how much is the cost of the 3% that you mentioned that is in the A8 amendment?
Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, I wish I knew that too. And I really have put in a fiscal note request at least 8 to 10 weeks ago. I was trying to find out what it was that was taken out in the conference committee. I will tell you it's in the roughly $8 to $15 million range, but I know our issue is more in the tails, and that's what I know is a big issue for us here. I would take anything, even if it's more one time, I would do that because it's making a statement to showing our folks in this area that we're moving this forward. We don't exactly know what the number is, but it's going to be in that, I'm guessing, that $8 to $10 to $12 million range up front. So I don't have that, but we would take anything. We would take, if it's not a 3%, we'll take whatever we can find. But I just think this is important to show us that their work is important.
All right. And with that, we actually have a question from Lee New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. Maybe the question is for fiscal staff. I don't think this is touching the general fund. It doesn't throw a bill out of balance, does it?
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative New Brindley, it is out of the Workforce Development Fund, as you see. It doesn't throw the bill out of balance today. However, I will note that the budget resolution includes a spending target for the Workforce Development Fund of $17 million. My understanding is the Economic Development Bill spends that amount of money. If two bills come into Ways and Means that both spend the target in the Workforce Development Fund, one of them, that cannot happen with both of them, so it wouldn't necessarily be out of balance here today, but it is out of balance with what will happen with the Workforce Development Fund.
Okay, thank you. Lee New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Berg. Yes, so this does not throw our budget out of balance, and it sends it to Ways and Means frankly, chairs from most of our committees sit on that, or our finance committee sit on that committee and are familiar with all of these issues and can make that decision. Thank you, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Lee New Brindley. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the dislocated worker program, which uses the Workforce Development Fund, has got specific purpose. It's not even in the human services jurisdiction to spend that amount. So setting the precedent that we will take unknown amount from a budget that is not in our jurisdiction does not make any fiscal sense. I understand, Representative Becker, trying to find places where we can get the funding. If there's one-time money to spend in rates, I'll do it right now. But there's nothing called one-time only rates increases. We have to think about the future as we set our budget, because we have to be cognizant of how we spend the money and how will that funding grow. We've talked about the fiscal imbalance, but what I promised is Chair Fish and I are going to do whatever it takes to make sure that we find some resources for the substance use disorder rates. And that's the promise that we're making today, but we'll keep on having that conversation. We are on the end of discussion of many things. Yes, we had some challenges when we saw the governor's recommendation to cut CARES, Carlton, and we made sure from both sides that we keep that hole, that we don't close the CARES Carlton. That is a commitment that we took out of programs that were set to be funded, and now we don't have any resources, which is one time only, because the rates require ongoing. So I'll ask you to vote no on this amendment as we continue to work on this issue before the end of session.
All right. I want to give the opportunity to Representative Baker to have a final word before we go to a roll call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you. I forgot to mention about the workforce stuff at the beginning. I was working on two different amendments earlier, and this is the one I failed to mention. But again, I also happen to be the lead on workforce, and I also will tell you, as we all have scrambled to try to find what we hear is the loose change in the cushions, this is an area that we need to look at, because there was an enormous amount of money spent last year in direct appropriations to a lot of places to help with workforce issues. $530 million, like we've never seen before in the state of Minnesota, that went out for workforce programs and assistance and helping people get jobs. As I sit on that committee, I've been always asking myself, what are we doing with all these resources here that should have been used over here in healthcare, human services, where I know we're looking for dollars? This was really meant, members, as a shot to leadership to say there's a lot of dollars yet sitting there, even in Chair Zhang's committee, that is not going to be spent. This could come from that, and I hope that we can send the message that maybe there's an idea to look at those workforce dollars. This is an ongoing fund. It's funded by unemployment insurance premiums. That's a part of it. That's how we get it. And I think it's a really good place to use in our workforce area here. So with that, again, I understand where this is likely going to go, but I really am searching for anything. We have done one-time money, Representative Chair Knorr, with nursing homes. We know that those reimbursements aren't ongoing. We've done it before. We'll do it again. This is a good time to just, again, look around to the rest of the buckets of money that are still there that desperately are needed in this area. So I would appreciate a support on the roll call. Thank you.
All right. And with that, let's go ahead and go to the roll call. I will hand it to staff.
Chair Knorr.
No.
Vice Chair Bonner.
No.
Lee New Brindley.
Yes.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Clardy.
No.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Yes.
Representative Hicks. Representative Keeler.
No.
Representative Katizuatun.
No.
Representative Pryor?
No.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Vernig?
No.
Representative Zlenzikar?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 6 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 6 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail and the A8 is not adopted. All right, it looks like we have an A9. Representative Zlesnikar.
Madam Chair and Chair Knorr, this A9 amendment, members, is regarding the nursing home loan that was passed last year. I would caution us to be expanding this loan, which is what this bill does, to other service-related providers. This amount of money is going to be tapped out by nursing homes already on a lifeline. And I do not understand why we would want to do that. We really need to have the $7 million added to that. The fact that there's this many nursing homes applying to this, when we had 300 nursing homes and we've had closures since we left last session, and it's continuing on that trajectory down. So my request to members is to keep this nursing home loan within the scope of nursing homes until they are stabilized before we expand it to new industry. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Mr. Chair, would you care to comment?
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Representative Zlesnikar, I think this is to make sure that the resources stays within the long-term area. Right now, that funding is set to expire. The application due date is today for the nursing homes. We're not taking it away from the nursing homes. We're giving them the opportunity for other long-term entities whereby we will create a special revenue account where still nursing homes can still tap into that resources for the long term. Right now, that funding is only for a short term where the funding will, there is a sunset for that fund. If nursing homes will apply by the end of today, all that funding may go out. That $100 million in that account may end up being spent by the nursing homes. We added additional funding to it, but what we created is we created a special revenue account so that the funds stay in that account. If you've got an assisted living that is struggling in your district, as people are choosing a different area, they have got a place to go get the resources. By the way, it's a loan. I know many people said no to loans when we were putting the $100 million loan program out there. We did the $300 million. On top of that, the nursing homes in the next 3 months and a half will receive the second portion of the payments that we created out of that $300 million. So this is not taking away from the nursing home, but strategically creating that the funds that we allocated can be ongoing without sunsetting it. Otherwise, it just goes into the general fund to be used for other purposes. So this is creating a long term, but by creating a long term, we're adding other usage within the long term area.
All right. Representative Zalesnikar, did you want to follow up?
Thank you, Chair. Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Norm. I guess my request then is that nursing homes would have priority. Nursing homes are under rate equalization, and there's different rules that apply in the nursing home lane versus other providers. And the stabilization of nursing homes is the highest level of care we have as a step down to the hospitals. We absolutely know that the nursing homes are in an unstable landscape right now, and my concern is this is going to further that potentially. I appreciate your initiatives to see the magnitude of what we're dealing with, but my concern is the nursing homes are the only model we have for this entire state for that highest level of care, highest level of care. And so I would consider possibly including language that they are priority, not that somebody else could be not considered, but they would have priority. If they are applying for this, if they don't get ranked lower, I would ask for your consideration on that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And with that, Representative New Brindley. Or Lead New Brindley, I said.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess we'll just take this opportunity to talk about this because this, of course, is a provision that's brand new. We've not taken any testimony on this. We never heard this in committee. These changes are brand new. And I would suggest that the changes in the underlying language are significant. And I want to be very clear about a couple things. In the current language, this loan fund is to be used for financially distressed nursing facilities. And we did that because we were in a, we have been in financial crisis for specifically our nursing homes in the state of Minnesota. We have now removed that requirement that this loan program goes to those facilities that are financially distressed. So now we've opened it up to anybody, not just those that are financially distressed. In addition to that, there are still requirements for our nursing homes that they're not generating sufficient revenue to cover operating expenses, they're at risk of closure, it's to preserve access to nursing facility services, et cetera. They're supporting people with complex high acuity support. There are very specific requirements for this initial loan program. The language in this bill blows this wide open. It now can go to other long-term services and supports. And the requirements here are much different. They have to be enrolled in a Minnesota healthcare program that provides at least one of these services. It's all stuff that we understand in this committee. However, it says additional operating revenue is necessary to preserve access to services within the community, expand services within the community, expand services to new communities. This completely changes the intent of this loan program. The intent of this loan program was to provide essentially emergency relief to nursing homes, again, that are not generating sufficient revenue to cover their expenses, that are at risk of closure, to preserve access to nursing facility needs. So when you say that, hey, this just you know, lets all these other programs take advantage of it. We're just extending it. I mean, it's all rosy. It's all good. We're just, you know, this is all kumbaya. This is a completely different program now. And I am wondering if there is anyone here from the Long-Term Care Imperative who I could ask a question of. And I understand that this is complex, but my question is, do we know, or do we have an idea of a dollar amount that has already been requested, that has already been applied for via the existing loan program?
Thank you. And it looks like we have someone headed towards the testifiers table. Come on down. You want to go ahead and state your name and affiliation and respond.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Lead New Brindley, I am not aware that any grant funds have gone out, loans have gone out at this time. I believe the chair is correct. The application closes this week. The RFI that was issued at the end of the calendar year initially generated a little over $100 million worth of interest, though I can appreciate there's a difference between interest and what would actually be funded.
All right. And my apologies, could you state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Yes, thank you. Erin Hubert with the Long-Term Care Imperative.
All right. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mrs. Hubert. So based on the information available, because obviously this isn't all available yet, but there has been over $100 million worth of interest. We don't know exactly what that means, but we are completely altering this program when we don't even know the current needs specifically of nursing facilities that are not generating sufficient revenue to cover their operating expenses. When we don't know the needs for nursing facilities at risk of closure, when we don't know about the needs of those who are trying to preserve access to facility services, and instead we're opening this up to preserve access, expand services locally, expand services to new communities. This is really bad policy, and we should adopt the Zalesnikar amendment and go back to the original intent of this bill.
Thank you, Lead New Brindley. Mr. Chair, if you'd like to go ahead and respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think we know what the request as of right now, 2 hours ago, because the deadline is today for the nursing homes to apply. The application is $45 million, and that will go to the nursing homes. They're guaranteed to receive if they have applied, and today is the deadline. April 18 is the deadline that they have. We know the numbers. We're not taking it away from the nursing homes. What we're creating, because this funding will sunset, this is not ongoing funding, and we're adding additional funds to this bucket as we make sure that every nursing home that is distressed can apply for that fund. There are rules in what they can spend on because of the VBR process. And some of the nursing homes are saying we don't want loans because it's going to create more headache for them. We know that. And some of the nursing homes, they also run assisted living programs. They run other type of programs within their communities. We know that they can also be stressed in terms of trying to make sure that they're able to continue to function. We are not excluding the nursing homes. They do have a cover right now that they can apply. And if they apply, that funding will go directly to the nursing homes. What we're doing here is creating that special revenue account with additional funds so that we can continue this fund to support other entities who are doing long-term care. It's in the best interest of the state to have a resource, which is a loan program. It's not a grant. It's not something that we're just giving to anybody who walks around, but because we're trying to make sure that we provide the best services to the seniors in the state of Minnesota.
Lead Member Neely, you had a follow-up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. So this is really interesting. So we're taking these funds, and in this very bill, we are eliminating disproportionate share. So we are placing assisted living facilities, those receiving elderly waiver, in a position to become financially distressed. We're doing that in this bill. We are getting rid of the disproportionate share, while at the same time saying, oh, but hey, we'll let you take out a loan. And I will tell you, nursing homes are not taking out loans because it's a headache. We told you this last year, the loan program, they're already leveraged. Trust me, if they could, they would. They are already leveraged. There's also an implication that somehow the problems are solved and that there's $45 million in requests today. What about next year? You have not solved this problem. You put a Band-Aid on the problem for our nursing homes, and we knew that last year. There is a Band-Aid on the problem. And in this underlying bill, like I said, you're getting rid of disproportionate share. You're creating new problems for facilities. And your answer to them is, but good news, we'll let you take out a loan to figure out how to do this. It's not right. It's not okay. I mean, it's very strange. We are usually, it's surprising what we're doing in this bill.
Right. Thank you. Mr. Chair, you have any additional comments?
I'll be more than happy to discuss the next amendment on the elderly waiver disproportionate share DISH. So with that, I ask members to vote no on the amendment.
All right. And with that, seeing no further discussion, we will go ahead and move to the vote. Those in favor of the A9, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right, it looks like the noes have it. The motion does not prevail, and the A9 is not adopted. And with that, we will go on to the next, which I believe the A13 is Representative Keeler's.
Correct. Do we need to move the amendment? So the amendment in front of us is actually, newsflash, Keeler's going to talk about homelessness, right? But kind of going off of when we had our conversation, our presentation, and then what Representative New Brindley or Lee New Brindley has brought up around reporting. We've listened to really try to address it. I know this is not all of the reporting mechanisms that we've maybe been hoping for, but what this amendment does and what we've been able to do in the short time is figure out how to add some reporting standards without adding any cost at this point in time. And so it's an effort to kind of meet in the middle, understanding that reporting for what our homelessness work is in Minnesota is important. I truly believe being effective and efficient is the way that we build really strong programming. And so with that, I just hope that we find support in this amendment.
All right. Thank you. And just to clarify for the record, Representative Keeler moves the A13 amendment for consideration. And then is there any discussion to the bill? Representative Knorr.
I support the amendment. I will ask the committee to vote yes on this amendment.
All right. Thank you. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the effort, Representative Keeler. I know that you are under constraints that you would love to not be under. I would just say, I mean, it's fine, add the amendment, but this information is already available. I mean, when we sat in committee, we got lots of information on the point and time count. We got, I mean, the homeless management information system is available right now online. Any of us can go and look at it. This is information that's already available. The reality is none of the reporting that I have asked for is in this because there is no reporting on programs and who they're serving and what their success is and what specifically services they're providing. There's just none of that information, and I appreciate Representative Keeler. I know that you are under constraints, and You know, we'll get to it, but I'm surprised at how we are choosing to spend money in this underlying bill. And that is information that we could actually use to make better choices in the future, and it's just not here. So, I mean, I guess this amendment doesn't hurt anything, but to be clear, this information is already super easily accessible. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Didn't really hear a question in that. Is there any further discussion before we go to the author of the amendment? Hearing none, I'm going to return it to Representative Keeler for comment.
I mean, you're right. I'm trying, right? I mean, it's... I think the point of this is that, yeah, the data's out there, but are they really providing it to us in, like, this great format that we can understand it? And it is. We trying to work towards the end goal that we're all getting to, trying to be fiscally sound and not adding more money to a reporting mechanism. My hope is that if what my proposal was to create the office, we could maybe put some more of those reporting mechanisms through the office. But this is where we are at this time. Would appreciate support.
Right. Thank you, Representative Keeler. Any final words, Chair Noor?
No final words, Madam Kay. Chair. I will ask the committee to support Representative Keeler's amendment.
All right. With that, we'll go to the vote. All those in favor of the 813, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? All right. The ayes have it. The motion prevails, and the 813 amendment is adopted. And then it looks like we have one final amendment here today, the A-15, Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Noor. I guess this is, I've talked about this before, and my concern is with eliminating this disproportionate share is only going to further stress the several providers in the state of Minnesota that are providing medical assistance, elderly waiver. And so this whole program, for people that don't understand, was set up to have some way to incentivize providers to take more elderly waiver, which is a great thing, so that they're serving more instead of capping programs. My concern with eliminating this is that while it's true, we made an elderly waiver investment last year, the problem is that data is based on 2017. So that reimbursement rate that they're getting is still based on 2017. And between 2017 and 2023, when we made decisions on the elderly waiver, a lot changed in our economy. A lot changed with inflation. And it certainly, if it affected all of us in this room, it certainly affected people trying to buy goods, trying to buy services in the nursing home. And to think it didn't, I think, is irresponsible for this body. And so my concern is that we're going to go backwards, and we are going to see providers choose to not serve the medical assistance elderly waiver population, not because they don't want to, but because they are financially going to be disincentivized to do that. And it's not disincentivized because they're greedy people that just want to make money. Whether they're for-profit or non-profit, they have to break even. They cannot go under and not pay their bills. And so if they're caring for the population, which is what we wanted them to do, I don't know why we would consider eliminating this program when we know the reimbursement rates were not based on the 2017, it was based on 2017 data. So I would hope that you would reconsider this. I'm not against the initiatives that you're doing with the 1115, but we're robbing Peter to pay Paul is the message I'm telling everybody here. And we are just going to substitute an issue on another landscape that is going to be right in front of us when we come back to this table. And I seriously think it needs to be reconsidered and look at allocating money a different manner so that we protect the elderly waiver program initiatives that we set up that made sense to get more providers to take elderly waiver clients into their settings and to up the rate because the rates were not sustainable and they still aren't. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Noor.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion to the bill? or to the amendment. Lead New Brindley. Chair Noor?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just wanted to check in with Representative Zalesnik. I know she has worked in this industry. Do you know what was the rate in 2023 for the elderly waiver? And what is the rate right now that we're paying for the elderly waiver program?
All right. Thank you. Representative Zalesnik.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank, or Madam Chair. It's been a long day. And thank you, Chair Noor. The elderly waiver amount for the settings is going to be different based on the setting. So every single setting in Minnesota, based on their rates are all different across the state. So cumulatively, DHS would have that data, but absolutely, the point is that the reimbursement rates are based on data that is very old, and we've done inflationary adjustments on a million things, but we made this reimbursement based on data that's from 2017, and a lot's changed. That's just the landscape fact. The implications for every single provider are going to be different on their reimbursement. So DHS probably has the totals for that.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesnicker, I think we discussed this last year when we were setting the budget. And when I came up with a huge appropriation for the elderly waiver, that was significant. And many people asked me, what were you thinking about? I was thinking about the elders that were providing services. In a setting whereby they're providing customized living on 83.5%, whereby they're required that 70% are on elderly waiver. The rate was approximately 131 before the phase-in and including the post-phase-in, 131. You know what we did? We increased the elderly waiver by 45%. The rate of this year is $190. If you compared, if we were still on the disproportionate share, it would have been 145. When you total it down to 2027, it's just a $40 increase when you look at the disproportionate share process. But when you look on the other side, it's almost 71% increase in total. So to say that we did not fund the elderly waiver, we need to look at our budget last year. 45% increase for the elderly waiver. We were more intentional. We were more deliberate to make sure that we do have a process of ensuring that our elderly individuals. I still remember Mary when she came to us here, and she looked into the eye of everyone here and she said, please do not forget about us. We did not forget about Mary and everyone who came and talked to us about the elderly waiver. So I think we did do the appropriate thing by making sure that we fund the elderly waiver. And I think it's appropriate to look into how did we spend our resources last year, to the nursing home, to the elderly waiver programs, to the customized living programs, and all the good things that we did last year. So this reflects, we did not take out last year because I wanted to make sure that the rates start in 2024. The rates are effective of January 2024. And I'll ask you to vote no on this amendment because we have taken care of that issue and will continue to have the conversation going forward. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I just want to make sure, Lead New Brindley, did you have a follow-up or are you good?
No, I haven't spoken yet on this. Okay. I haven't spoken on this amendment
okay.
yet.
Okay. Lead New Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly have things to say. here's the thing. We all agreed on what you did last year on the elderly waiver. We also all agreed on this committee that you didn't have enough money. I mean, that was the message. That was the Republican message last year for this committee, is that your leadership failed you and did not give you the target you needed to actually solve a problem. So when you say you fixed this, no, you increased it. You made a difference, but you did not solve this problem. Which frankly is my frustration, because with $30 billion last year, we actually could have solved some problems in this state. but we chose not to. And the fact remains that the rates are based on 2017. That is pre-pandemic, pre-Bidenflation.
Lead New Brindley.
And there is not enough money to make these folks whole. And the point of the disproportionate payment was to help offset that. And so I hope that you are prepared in removing this disproportionate payment. I hope you are prepared for the increased cost you're going to see when folks now are forced to move from assisted living to nursing homes, where there is a much higher cost of care, assuming, of course, they can find a nursing home bed. We could have solved this problem last year, but we did not. And again, Chair Knorr, we all appreciate what you did. We all supported it. But your leadership failed you. And they did not give you enough money to actually solve a problem. We should all support this amendment.
All right. I do want to remind members to be careful about impugning motives and just we're going to assume positive intent from everyone in the room. With that, Chair Knorr, do you have any final comments?
No final comments. I think we have got more work to do, yes, in all the areas of human services, but I'll ask you to vote no on this amendment.
All right. Thank you. And with that, we're going to go ahead and go to a vote. All those in favor of the A15, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The amendment does not succeed, and the A15 is not adopted. We're going to go ahead and move on to final passage of the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the final DE1 as amended? Representative Baker?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to, you know, closing comments on the work this year, and again, so far, there's still more to do. I do believe Chair Knorr is going to still work on these things like he said he's going to do. He's shown that to me time and time again that that's what he's going to do. But again, I think that we made a lot of attempts to try to find money in other areas that were sometimes not in our jurisdiction, like the workforce fund we tried. But also, you know, you took money from areas that are not in your jurisdiction too, like ORAC. And that's something that we're going to have to understand, that you can't have it both ways. And so we're going to continue to fight for those kind of reasonablenesses when there isn't enough money in the general fund. And like you, Chair Knorr, I was looking elsewhere. And I'm going to continue to bring ideas like that where money does exist, because as Lee New Brindley said, we could have done a lot more fixes last year that we didn't do. But we did make a significant impact, but not all the way through in a lot of areas. When SUD folks get cut out of the picture, that is a problem. But members, I really wanted to support this bill today. I can't today. I wish I could. We'll keep working on it, though. It's some good stuff in here. And again, I want to thank Chair Fisher. We're a lot of good bipartisan stuff in here. We're moving things along. We put some guardrails up for some peer recovery folks. We're moving in the right direction. But let's keep our ideas flowing, and let's continue to help more people. This is what the bill is going to do. So I hope it gets better as it moves along. Thank you.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Knorr. And I just wanted to make one other comment about one of the items in the bill that's talking about the background checks. And I just have concerns with the allocation of that money to do a study to see if we can take that on as a state. I have great concern with the state taking on one more initiative when we have numerous initiatives, as you can see by the numerous committees we've had, where we have studies and we have many names for it all, but it's basically more work for MDH, DHS to do this. And this criminal background study has been an issue for assisted living providers and nursing homes for a long time, making it effective and efficient. And I'm not sure that $500,000 is going to be enough to deal with what this issue is, and I think we need to just, I just want to have that on the record for you to consider. because that has been, in my experience and in talking to numerous providers, it's still a major barrier to get people entered into our settings. And I know that Chair Noor shares that concern that I do, and I've talked to Rep. Frazier, and I've been working on this for years, and I hope we can get to a positive resolution on this whole background studies to get people in the field faster. So I appreciate your initiative, Chair Noor. I hope you will take that under consideration as we move forward to fix criminal background studies. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lesnikar. I do want to just point out to set expectations at this time. It is 2:26. We do actually have the room until 2:50 so that we can continue with discussion and wrap this bill today. But I just want to set that expectation for folks before we go on to continue discussion. And with that, I'm going to go over to Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's actually quite a few new provisions in this bill that we have not heard yet and have not had testimony on, so I do have questions. I would start with the new language on EIDBI. My question is, there's just some definition changes. Where did these come from, and why are we making these changes?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think we're not changing the definitions in EIDBI. We're putting additional credentialing, which is the QABA, which is another accreditation process. We understand the workforce shortage that exists in EIDBI. In fact, most of the BCBA right now, we don't have enough in the state to do that face-to-face. They always do online, some of them. So this is to provide another alternative for an accredited institution who will provide similar process as allowed under the same guidance of EIDBI.
Okay. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's board certified behavior analysis as defined by the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, or a qualified behavior analyst as defined by the Qualified Applied Behavior and Analysis Credentialing Board. Where are these boards housed? Are those Minnesota specific? Are those federal boards? Where are these coming from?
Representative Noor, or
some
Noor.
Of the Madam Chair, Lee New Brindley, the QBA, I think it's more of an international. It's based on a national level, which credit provides accreditation for those individuals who will be serving the same groups in EIDBI.
All right. Thank you. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These are a lot of individual bills that are new language, so I am going to have quite a few questions. I guess my only question, in Minnesota, we don't like compacts. We like our own thing. So this is actually kind of a big deal to come out of nowhere, because that's just not how we function in Minnesota. We do our thing. So I think it's unfortunate that we have not had testimony on this and don't really know the details on it. So I appreciate what little you're able to tell us, but it's not much. The delay, do we have any update? The personal care, the PCA for parent or spouse, like, I think we all agree that makes sense. I mean, a lot of these folks actually have to leave the workforce to take care of their family members. But do you know what? Do we have any new timeline on that Fed approval? Do we know where we are in that process? Do we have an idea of how this is going to look in the future? And implementation, if we've got that figured out.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair and members, I think we shared the good news that now we have been approved by the federal government to implement CFSS. So CFSS will take care of that issue of parent or spouse providing care for their loved one. We understand that implementation timeline may be in the next 2 to 3 months. More than 3 months. So this provides a gap. When we implemented the short-term gap after the pandemic emergency rules, we were able to provide the same services based on last year's budget, which ended, I believe, by the end of the year. Now we're extending that to make sure that we can provide that continuous coverage for the parent and spouses. So I'm assuming and hoping because this will be a rotating process. We're not going to be converting all the PCAs in one day, so it may take some time. And for that, I just wanted to ask if someone from the department can just give us a timeline of the implementation.
I see Ms. Grom headed towards the testifiers table. Again, if you want to go ahead and state your name, affiliation, and proceed.
Hi, Madam Chair, members. Christy Grom with the Department of Human Services. So, Lead New Brindley, yes. Children, our Community First Services and Supports will be implemented. It's been approved by CMS. And so we are working right now on getting our systems ready to implement it fully. So working on like end user testing, making sure the counties know how to use it. We're trying to roll this out as smoothly as possible for people, of course. It is a big change. It's a good one. It's a positive one, especially being able to pay paid parents and spouses. But we are anticipating around June being able to start kicking this off. So there might be, we're still, systems is sometimes a challenging thing. So there could be some slight delays in that. But I think what we're projecting now is still June. And then people will be able to get on CFSS on a rolling basis as their annual reassessment occurs. So that will happen over the course of about 1 year. And that's why even when people start getting on CFSS, or even when CFSS is implemented, people might not yet be on it and have access to be able to use parents and spouses to provide those important cares.
All right. Thank you. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that. That is really helpful. That's exactly what we needed to know about that bill. Mr. Chair, the next bill, facility relocation. This is a bill we have not heard in committee. This is entirely new language. And my real question about this language is the approval of relocations really at the sole discretion of the commissioner? I don't see any guidelines in this language on relocations.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair and members, I think last year we created a working group to look into the issues that small assisted living facilities are facing. We got back from the working group and the Department of Health working with DHS, three places that we can make an adjustment. Number one was relocation. Number two was the other section that we approved a few minutes ago in the amendment. That means the portability of orientation. If somebody took orientation in one place, they can go to the other facility without having to take the orientation. Likewise, I think there were some few minor changes in the amendment that we included a few minutes ago. This was an agreed upon by the working group. And I think for the commissioner to make the judgment whether it's feasible for relocation. If someone has got major damage to their home, then we want them to follow the instruction from the commissioner and get the approval. If someone loses their license to operate in a building where the owner says you have to move out tomorrow, we don't leave those individuals hanging cold. We want to provide them a space where they can move to with the approval of the commissioner. So I think there may be different circumstances that may lead to relocation. We can't capture everything that may lead to relocation, but I just wanted to get a little bit of input from the department based on the conversation they've had with the stakeholders.
All right, and we'll welcome Ms. Grom back to the table. If you want to go ahead and respond.
Madam Chair, Lead New Brindley, can I just clarify, were you just wanting a general sense in terms of what Chair Nord just provided about what the CAD EBI portability language does or what the barrier is or what can I?
Yeah. Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, actually, I think all of us understand the problem.
Okay.
And we all understand that there are situations where relocation is necessary, actually. I don't think that's the concern at all. My question is actually much more specific. My question is, it appears from this language that relocation is at the sole discretion of the commissioner and that we have not put any guardrails in this language. And so really, it's not really a question for you. It's really a question for Chair Noor. There's no guardrails, right? And I understand flexibility, but typically as a legislative body, we choose to provide guardrails.
All right. Ms. Grom or Mr. Chair?
Madam Chair, Lead New Brinley, this work is still in progress. So we have been working with the Department of Health, who oversees some of this in some aspects outside of the waivers. We've been working with the provider community, who's been really actively engaged on this topic for many years. And we just had a meeting, I think, last week, and we've gotten some additional language from them. We're working together to kind of make sure that the issues that we're seeing at the department level, to make sure that people's lives aren't being disrupted with too many moves, and that there's a good reason for the move, that people's rights are protected, and that providers who might be in a situation where, for example, they are renting a space and have an opportunity to own a place, or the space that they're in is not meeting all the licensing requirements and is not as safe as they would want it to be for individuals. So we want to make sure we're meeting all of those needs collectively, and we are working on language to improve what's in the bill right now, and we'd be happy to share that with you as well as we work through that.
All right. Lead New Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I appreciate that. And really, again, my comment now, since it's not going to be answered, would be to Chair Knorr. Typically, as a legislature, we choose to put some guardrails around this and not leave things at the sole discretion. So, again, had we heard this bill, we maybe could have discussed that. We addressed the nursing home loan issue. That is totally new language that we have not had a committee hearing on, that we have not had adequate discussion on. The case management redesign, that language is just a little bit confusing. Again, this is totally new language. And the language is a little bit confusing because it talks about consulting with folks to improve case management information systems, identify necessary changes needed to comply. But then it also says the SSIS and adjacent systems must be modified to support any increase in the intensity of time reporting requirements prior to implementation. The point is, it's sort of directing a redesign, and it is requiring modifications. In fact, maybe this is a question for Mr. Berg. Does this have an appropriation that goes with this portion?
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative New Brinley, yes, that is, there is a item on the sixth page of the spreadsheet. It is the net $380,000 in 2425 and $75,000 a year in the tails.
Lead New Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did we get a fiscal note on this? Did we have a fiscal note?
Mr. Burr.
Madam Chair, Representative New Brinley, there is not, I believe, a fiscal note on this bill. This was information that we got from the department.
Thank you, Mr.
Lead
Berg.
New Brinley.
Thank you. Do we know then if that information covered modifications to SSIS and adjacent systems? Do we know what information that the data you got from the department covered?
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative New Brinley, it does cover modifications to SSIS. If you had the spreadsheet in front of you, you'd see that it's three lines, which is modifications to the MMIS system, the SSIS system, and then Agile apps. It's essentially all IT in this.
Lead New Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Berg. I appreciate that. So we have some information from the department. We do not actually have a fiscal note. So I would point out, we actually don't know if this bill is in balance. We don't have a fiscal note.
New Brinley?
Yep, I'm working through it. This is a big bill, and there's a lot of new provisions that we have never heard in this committee. My question now is on the study of navigator reimbursement. What are we trying to get at with this study?
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, just a quick note on the case management piece. This is something that the counties requested so that they're able to achieve the goals that they want. So we're supporting the counties, and in fact, if you look at the letter from the counties, they are very supportive of that initiative. So we decided to make sure that it was ongoing discussion, that we didn't have the time to have a bill, but likewise, some of the other things, you know, it's kind of we're waiting to have negotiation with all the stakeholders, everybody to be able to support what we're doing. So this came around that process, so we included it. For the navigators, I think we are all aware of the work that they did during the renewal process, the struggles in terms of making sure that each and every Minnesotan who is eligible for renewal receives that renewal. So the funding is more sporadic. We had to give them grants. Some of it is we had to reimburse them for every eligibility that they run through. So we want to make sure that we do have appropriate mechanism by working with MNSUA and also DHS, so they don't have to rely on us giving them grants to cover their costs.
Thank you. Just for a time check, we do have 9 minutes left until we have to leave the room, and I want to make sure we have time for closing comments for this. But Lead New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just point out that when it comes to navigators, I would remind all of us that we actually also have an entire industry of insurance agents who can do much of that same work, including with the exchange. Comments to the bill. I made an extensive list here of provisions in this bill. Developing an MA hospital transit benefit. Developing a tribal targeted case management. Studying a continuous improvement. A pilot program for hospital to home. Establishing provider capacity building grants. Establishing a reentry demonstration waiver. A task force on mentally ill and dangerous, establishing a DHS slush fund, establishing Office of Homelessness and Housing, redesign of targeted case management, developing social determinants of health waiver, studying navigator reimbursement. This entire bill is new programming and significant changes to existing programs. The vast majority of the funding in this bill is new programming, unproven programming in the state of Minnesota. That's the vast majority of this bill, with, by the way, pretty extensive tails. Pretty extensive tails when we already know we're in deficit in the tails. We already know. The money is not there in the tails, and we are directly adding to that problem in this bill. Frankly, I don't know that any of us on this side of the table have a problem with any of these programs. In fact, I think we actually think most of them are a good idea. But when you're studying things and creating task forces and standing up new programs, standing up new offices, that is not something you do when you have no money. That is something you do when you have $30 billion to spend. We're in a very different place now than we were last year. And right now, we have real problems to solve. But the bulk of our money, the bulk of our target is going into all these studies and pilots and new things that we don't know. We're doing a lot of robbing Peter to pay Paul in this bill that's going to have consequences. It is going to have fiscal consequences. When you remove disproportionate share and those folks who are currently on MA, elderly waiver, in assisted living programs, are forced to move and are now in nursing homes, there's going to be a higher cost to the state of Minnesota. As usual, the specific programming is not super controversial in this committee, which I really enjoy, actually. But this is all stuff that should have been done when we had money, and we don't now. And we're adding massive money to the tails when we don't have it. Madam Chair, I would request a roll call on final passage.
Okay. A roll call has been requested. And with that,
I want final passage. Are we still in the DE? We still have to adopt the DE, I suppose.
Correct.
Okay. All right. With that, I'm going to give the final comment to the chair on the DE.
It's a good bill. We shall adopt the DE.
All right. All those in favor of adopting the DE, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
All right. It looks like the ayes have it. The DE is adopted. And we are now on final passage of the bill. Do we have any?
Sorry. DE as amended.
House file 5280 as amended is before us. And with that, Mr. Chair, any final comments on the bill before we move to a vote?
Madam Chair and members, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody, especially to our nonpartisan staff, Mr. Berg, and also Ms. Pugnelli. I wanted to say thank you to not only the individuals who have helped us get here, the pages, Rachel Onsario, and also Michael Thomas. I wanted to say thank you to Sean Herring and also Jonathan Carter for all their help, and also Joe Durham, who has been phenomenal in what we do. Wanted to say thank you to the folks from DHS who have been amazing in making sure that we can build a team, and also wanted to thank our committee legislative assistant, Fardosa Ahmed, for all the work, and all the members. I think this is part of our conversation. We're never done until the end. So we've got more work to do. We've done some amazing jobs, some transformative job. We've done some life-saving and life matters in this committee. And this will be ongoing conversation. So I ask you to support House File 5280 as amended. So thank you so much, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Chair Knorr renews his motion to refer House File 5280 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. And with that, a roll call has been requested. I will allow staff to take the roll.
Chair Knorr.
Aye.
Chair Knorr, aye. Vice Chair Bonner.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonner, aye. Lead New Brindley.
No.
Lead New Brindley, nay. Representative Baker.
No.
Representative Baker, nay. Representative Clardy.
Aye.
Representative Clardy, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Representative Fisher, aye. Representative Franson.
Franson, no.
Representative Franson, nay. Representative Gilman.
No.
Representative Gilman, nay. Representative Hicks.
Aye.
Representative Hicks, aye. Representative Keeler.
She's excused.
Excuse, Cap. Representative Katizwatun.
Aye.
Representative Katizwatun, aye. Representative Pryor.
Aye.
Representative Pryor, aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Quam, nay. Representative Vernig.
Aye.
Representative Vernig, aye. Representative Zlensikar.
No.
Representative Zlensikar, nay. Madam Chair, there are 8 ayes, 6 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 6 nays, House File 5280 as amended is on its way to Ways and Means. And with that, we want to say a final. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to request that the nonpartisan staff to make any technical corrections or changes necessary to put the bill in the shape of the intent that we have here. So I wanted that to be noted and included.
Yes, and we'll put that just to make sure that's on the record. We are directing nonpartisan staff to be authorized to make technical changes as necessary to reflect the will of the committee. And with that, we are adjourned.